The grinders, as too few in number, have quit. The seeing is dark at the windows of it. The doors of two leaves have been shut in the street. The sound of the grinders so low when they meet. Ecclesiastes chapter 12, that was, verses 3 and 4, or parts of 3 and parts of 4, in the Ward Green version of 2004. The poetic translation by yours truly, which is the scripture for today, little children. And returning to our study now in the Ark of Urartu, I've been doing some significant amount of research in the upcoming portions of the chapter 2 that we're studying in the article of yours truly, the Ark of Urartu, the Orient Express, and looking at this chronology and genealogy that we have for this time period that is so poorly otherwise documented in other literature. Although I want to point out, we do have this wonderful book by Jackson, Chronological Antiquities, which is, of course, this is volume 1 from 1752, and this heading here, Antiquities and Chronologies, perhaps a paraphrasing of the title of the book, Chronological Antiquities by John Jackson, 1752. We're here on page 263. We read that there was a genealogy for the lineage of Ham, that it came from Abedinus, and it included this lineage of Babius, Anebus, Caelus, or Caelus, that is, and Arbelus, and then Ninus. And corresponding to that genealogy, there was the Armenian genealogy from Haik of Japheth's line, Japheth the son of Noah. And Haik's son was Armenicus, and then his son Armaeus, his son Amasia, his son Galamius, his son Harma, and his son Aram, corresponding in time to the lineage that we just read from Ham's line. And so, this is important because it's a good source, and one of the important sources that I used in establishing this chronology. But he mentions also in his book this source that he used, which we also use, which is Moses Cornensis. I think we go to the next page for that. I was reading this today. Let's see. Moses Cornensis, he calls him. Or as we called him, and as his name appears in different forms, Moses Cornatsi. Here he is. He mentions Moses Cornensis right here. Moses Cornensis. That these reigns of these kings in the line of Ham there, in, starting with Belus, were preserved by Africanus, he says, and not preserved by, they were not set down, he says, in the fragment preserved by Moses Cornensis. At least the years of them, that is. But the bare genealogy was set down. by Moses Cornensis, which is of inestimable value, he says. So, I mean, it's very true that this is of inestimable value, or inestimable meaning, you know, priceless, very, very high value, so high that we can't put a price on it or a value on it. And in the days of Peleg was the earth divided, so the generation of Peleg, the sixth after Noah, this is chapter 2, paragraph 10 now, of the Ark of Urartu. Peleg, the sixth after Noah, or seventh, with Noah included, this generation is a clue to when a rift opened, Genesis 10 and 25. And to Eber there were two sons born. The name of the one was Peleg, because in his days the earth was divided. Peleg, because in his days the earth was divided. That's the important part of that scripture that we're looking at right now. The division of the earth. So what does it mean? That is the question, because it could mean when they divided up the land, which is dated to 2741 in our chronology, which is from also an account described, at least, without the years or the dates in the Book of Jubilees, where they divided up the land. And so that must have happened after the confusion of languages, when the nations began to split apart. Now, some say that this is when the continents divided, or that it refers to the dividing up of the lands amongst the sons of Noah, as I just said, which was mentioned in the Book of Jubilee, in a formal agreement. But the usage of that word, quote-unquote, earth, elsewhere, can be taken to mean the part of humanity subject to the statutes and laws of heaven, as may be said to be true of the family of the line of Heber. That is, the faithful humans who follow and subject themselves to the true God. By this interpretation, we find that the family of Heber is split up after the birth of Heber's son, Peleg, 2749 BCE in our chronology. Peleg's son Reu, or Ragav, was given his name Reu, which means in Hebrew friend, because of the evil of men in their building a tower, according to the Book of Jubilees. Chiyu, a warrior and inventor of weapons of Chinese myths, lived at a time when Shennong, or Saleh, and Huangdi, or Heber, sought a place with him. That is, the dividing up of the earth, as was said to have occurred in the days of Peleg, the son of Heber. As fits Nimrod, son of Mizraim, a mighty hunter. This is Chiyu, that is, the warrior. It fits Nimrod, son of Mizraim, a mighty hunter. Now, the word black in Hebrew is Cush, from Jeremiah 13 and 23. And when we look that up, it says, can a Cushite change his skin? Showing that it's referring to the skin, something about the skin, which would logically refer to the color of the skin. Because what else about skin would be that noteworthy, right? So, Cushite evidently means black, or Cush means black in Hebrew. And Ara the Handsome of Armenia, as shown from Hake in Noah's line, 12th in the line of Japheth, is known from Armenian legend, as suffering a tragic death in war against Assyria when the affections of Semiramis, widow of Ninus, mother of Ninuus, for the already married Ara, were spurned. So Semiramis was the mother of Ninuus and the widow of Ninus. So therefore, it looks like we don't necessarily have this identified correctly, where we said Ninuus was the founder of the Assyrian Empire. Ninus is actually the one who's believed to have been the founder of the Assyrian Empire. So when I was talking about that, it was an alternative interpretation of the lineage given by Jackson there, and also by us, in what we studied previously, which is this descent line, Bavius, Anibus, Caelus, Arbelus, and Ninus. See, Arbelus there, and Belus, Anibus, Caelus, Arbelus, Ninus. And then Ninuus, of course, would follow Ninus, but Arbelus and Belus, let's compare that with the table we gave previously, which was here. We had Nimrod, followed by Bab, then Anibus, Arbel, Kael, Arbel, and Ninus. We had a repetition of Arbel, but Babus would be Bab, and then Anibus. So we have Babius, Anibus. We have Anibus, Arbel, Caelus, Arbel. Whereas in Jackson's Chronological Antiquities book, page 263, Babius, Anibus, Caelus, Arbelus. So the Arbel here is an additional generation that we have in our table that is not present in Jackson's book. It's Bavius, Anibus, Caelus in his book, without the first Arbelus, then Arbelus, and then Bavius, Anibus, Caelus, right? Bavius, Anibus, Caelus, right, Arbelus, yes. Whereas we have what's going on? We're not, okay. There we go. Bavius, Anibus, Caelus, Arbelus is what he has. So he omits the first Arbelus there. Right. But otherwise, they're very similar, what we have and what he has. And we got ours from somewhere like Moses Cornensis, or Moses Cornatsi, as he's also called here, in our table too. This came from Moses Cornensis, as Jackson calls him, his book. So we didn't make this up on our own, but his list is quite similar to the list given by Jackson from Abedinus, the source Jackson uses. So the interesting thing is here that, okay, so if Belus in this case lived at the time of Hake, and Hake is said to have killed Nimrod, and we see that in our chronology, you know, that Hake killing Nimrod is agreeable to the order of the genealogy and the generations there, which roughly correspond. So it's quite significantly impressive there, the way that Hake lived at very close to the same time, and in fact his life could very well have overlapped that of Nimrod, so that this is very believable. But we also see from that this Nimrod must be Belus in this case, because Belus came before Babius on this list. So Belus is another name for Nimrod also, apparently. Something I'm not sure if I really paid much attention to it during all the intense research I was doing, but Belus is also, of course, we know, a king's, he was said to be the one of the predecessors, and believed to be, in some cases by some historians, the father of Ninus, right? He was believed to be a predecessor of Ninus, which is so important because Ninus was the founder of the Assyrian Empire. So all of this is very approximate because this bell is here in our chronology. When we come down to Ninus here, because the lifetimes of these generations are long enough, it does, according to the Septuagint, they lived very long lives. So these dates here are quite adequate to arrive at Ninus in 2141 BCE. And then the son of Semiramis, called Ninuus, who succeeded the first king of Assyria, still fits very well here, with 2141 being the beginning of the reign of Ninus, who lived at the time of Tira of the Bible, called here Terai, but whose date from birth to death is 2276 to 2071 in our chronology. So 2141 falls right in that range for the beginning of the reign of the Assyrian king Ninus, the first king of that empire. It fits extremely well. And then the thing is, in 2300, right? Approximately, that's when this Arbel here, you see, this is the second, this is also perhaps the same person as Belus, right? The name Arbel or Arbelus. So Arbelus could be Belus the second, who succeeded Nimrod, who was also called Belus. So it all works really, really well, but it's such ancient history as to cause immense confusion if we don't have any guidance. And we have another source that's very, very valuable here, if we have time to discuss it. We will. We've got this Book of Sothis, which talks about the number of generations, or at least the number of kings, from the beginning of the dynasty of the Sothic cycle, right, the first king of which was Mestrium, who in the Book of Sothis preceded all of the others. So he was the first of this king, of this list of kings, first of the kings of Egypt, and that would correspond to Mithraim, right, or Menes, or, you know, the first king of Egypt, who also, we believe, was a father, the father, actually, of Nimrod, said to be the father of Nimrod by at least the source that we use there, Moses Cornensis. But he was certainly, according to the ancient accounts, he was the predecessor of Nimrod. Now, Nimrod could have been this Kurotus person listed here, although that's not clear. But we have this list of kings, starting with Mestrium, that's the important part, or Mizraim, first king of Egypt, who we believe ruled in Shinar, though. We don't believe he ruled in Egypt, because Egypt began in Shinar, and then was later translated to, physically moved to Egypt. But if we look down this list of the first 25 kings, after that 25th one, the entry describes the following in the Book of Sothis. It says that from the first king, the total of years is 700, belonging to 25 kings, i.e., and this is so important here, from the general cosmic year 2776, because we have 5550, year one of Adam, then we get 5550 minus 2776, if we're not worried about, you know, year one and year zero and all, you know, the exact, if we're just doing it approximately, we get 2774. 2774 is, in fact, the eclipse of Nimrod that we found. We called it the eclipse of Nimrod, or it's the beginning, actually. We are we going to talk about that in this article that we're studying now? I think we might be going to. It was in the Ark of Urartu when I discovered this eclipse of Nimrod in 2774, which is exactly, I mean, it's completely off the wall, unexpected discovery. First of all, the eclipse was unexpected because it was the only time that was possible for the Egyptian calendar to have begun. First of all, that was the other thing, because of the 1,460-year cycle of the star Sothis. It was either in 2,700 and something, or it would be 1,460 years prior to that, which is a lot different in time. So it had to have begun in 2,774, or it's going to have to be shifted by 1,460 years, because that's the length of the Sothic cycle. Okay, so the dispersion took place, it says here also, but this incredible correspondence between this date given by Africanus also, I mean, Africanus also gives this number 2776, not just the Book of Sothis, which was not written by Africanus, but other people give this number 2776, or I think, I'm not sure if Africanus exactly now, whether it was 27, it was within 1 year of that. At least, it was very, very close to being within. So Africanus, as well as the Book of Sothis, they all agree with our 2774, apparently, which is remarkable. But the difference is that this source is saying, the Book of Sothis is saying that this was the year when the dispersion took place, and we would say no, not quite right, but that the dispersion took place in the fifth year of Peleg, or Phalek, as he's called here. It agrees exactly with our birth of Peleg in 2749, and the dispersion 4 years after that in BCE years 2749 minus four, right? 2749 minus four to get the year five of Peleg, 2749 minus 4. What's going on? Equals 2745, and that's the dispersion in our chronology, 2745. But that's also, if we add, we have to add 35 years to that, actually. We got 2745. Plus 35 is 2780, which is the death of Shem in our chronology. So that would be the year one of Arpakshad, the son of Shem, in our chronology. Is actually, therefore, the dispersion in our chronology is year 35 of Arpakshad, which is almost exactly right. And the year 5 of Peleg is exactly right. So all of that works perfectly. If we take the dispersion as being a date that occurred after 2776, which we differ from this particular account, where it's said to have occurred in the same year, 2776, but the fact that we can use these numbers at all and get any kind of sense out of it is a genuine miracle. I can't imagine. I mean, I've looked at other histories, I guess, all my life. None of history makes any sense, generally. So, Ara the Handsome of Armenia, 12th. We've covered all that. Yeah, we've covered all this. Ara the Handsome is talked about right here in the table 2 above in yesterday's study that we talked about. So he corresponded to, evidently, anyway, the time of it doesn't exactly correspond here with Semiramis, who was the mother of Nennuas, because she would be a generation prior to that. So that doesn't exactly correspond. But we don't know when these sons were born. Maybe Ara was, evidently Ara would be born earlier, and this would be a series that a lineage that took place with the births occurring in slightly shorter generations, which would allow Ara to be aligned with Semiramis, or the time of Ninus here, right? Because we don't have dates on each of these lines here, these lineages. They don't have dates associated with them. And we know Hake was probably earlier, because he aligned with Nimrod. So we'd be shifting back one generation already to get Hake aligned. So therefore, Ara would move up one to being of the time of Ninuus, the son of Semiramis. So already it's more closely aligned just by that adjustment of Hake being aligned with Nimrod. Because according also to Jackson, that Hake, he says, killed Nimrod. In his book here, his book is certainly something worth reading. And he takes, of course, the year of Ninus in 2016, whereas we have 2141 for the first year of Ninus. We differ, right, in the chronology. Oh, that's right. There's something in the footnote, I think, he talks about. Yeah, here it is. Belus. The Babylonian king Belus, whom we identify in our table 2 with Nimrod, was contemporary with Hake, who slew him, it says in the footnote there on page 263 of Jackson's book. So now can we resume our viewing of the movie, the Raw Expeditions, the Adventures of Thor Heyerdahl?
Better they all feel to cling to large papyrus bundles in case of disaster than to venture out into little foam rubber raft. They begin cutting it up and building up the after section. Far cry from papyrus. The waves break it up and wash it out to sea. Everything follows the undulations of the papyrus, so wooden structures break or are ground into sawdust. Many jars have holes worn into them, or they break. Rudder oars are spliced and spatchcocked from end to end, but not a single papyrus reed is damaged, for the wooden parts break constantly. Rod holding the rudder oars is sunk so deep it slows the boat down and has to be sawn off. We had been sailing for nearly 2 months, had experienced the Atlantic in both storm and fair weather, and were no accustomed to living on a listing boat whose aft section lay underwater. Then we arrived in the area where the American hurricanes at that very moment were developing. And here, with a week sailing to the West Indies still before us, we sailed into the worst storm we had ever encountered.
After the storm, Ra is no longer herself. The sail is down. Everything in chaos. Half the boat is underwater. They are surrounded by small pieces of papyrus torn from the starboard side where ropes have been chewed off in the storm. Sharks swim among the papyrus. The boat must be sewn together with new rope so that all the papyrus will not be swept away. But the sharks are an ever-present problem.
Suryal went down to check the bottom. He was able to report that the papyrus hull was as good as before. A few barnacles, but otherwise ship-shaped. Sharks. More and more of them arrived, and it became impossible to continue repairs.
The expedition is getting close to the West Indies. I had already rigged a small yacht, the Shenandoah, which he has chartered to meet Ra with film cameramen. But whether the boat will hold together for the rest of the voyage is a serious question.
We kept losing more and more of the papyrus that was supposed to keep us afloat, and the starboard mast lost its support, so we had to take down the sail. The situation was critical.
After a turbulent 3 days of thrashing about in the 20-foot waves of a storm.
That's it for today's study, little children, and for the viewing of the movie also. That's it for today. We're going to be concluding part one of the Ra expeditions very shortly, apparently tomorrow, and maybe beginning part two at that time, if we have time for that tomorrow. So it's been September 24th, 2024 of the Common Era, and the time, 12:21 North American Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you very much, and thank you for listening and watching. In my behalf, this is Liv Dusty, and this is Cassie. They're saying bye for now, and we've been studying the article, The Ark of Urartu. We looked at table in chapter 2, paragraph 9 also today, but we studied chapter 2, paragraph 10 today, and the book by Jackson, of course, Chronological Antiquities from 1752, volume 1, that was, page 263. Bye for now.